Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Well, that didn't last long. A planned Putin-Trump summit fell apart in a matter of hours. The sticking point was a ceasefire, a condition Russia has long and categorically rejected. A ceasefire will not end this conflict. Seeking security for all will. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Alex Reportify in China. He is a geopolitical analyst. In Serbia, we have Drago Bosnic. He is a geopolitical and military analyst. And in Portugal, we cross to Alexander Guerrero. He is an international legal analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Alex in China here. I'm titling the program Back to Square One. Or maybe I should preface it by saying Trump reverts to the Biden policy on Ukraine. All I'm trying to say here is in Trump's 10 months in office in his second term, not much has been accomplished. As a matter of fact, the Trump administration the first time imposed major sanctions. So where are we in all of this?
Well, you know, the adults in the room have made the decision, you know, the Washington consensus, that permanent unelected blob of experts in the State Department and the think tanks, and of course the intelligence agencies, I think, had a panic attack here. You know, them saying a direct talk between two presidents without the permission of Brussels and Washington access, how terrifying. It's almost if they were trying to stop the war, which is a profound threat to the entire business model of DC's foreign policy establishment. That's where I think things went wrong. You know, we saw reports of the European allies that they were alarmed. Can you imagine that, guys? Alarmed that the gravy train of the US military aid and the glorious proxy war might actually come to an end if this all happened.
Yeah, just
back
like
to you, Peter. Thank you.
Just like the Afghan grift ended, and they needed another one to get to keep paying themselves. You always need another home in the Hamptons, you know. Drago, it looks like what happened to me. I wasn't in the room, obviously. Okay, but it looks like to me that there was an agreement. They would have a summit. They would have a summit in Budapest, and they're getting their working groups together. And then somebody like Marco Rubio says, "Oh, by the way, we have to have a ceasefire first." Before we have the summit, which, of course, the Russians have categorically been against since the beginning here. Do you think that's plausible? Oh, by the way, we need a ceasefire for the meeting to take effect. Go ahead, Drago.
Well, I mean, I would call it like a strategic catch-22. You have to do something, but in order to do it, something has to happen before that. And that can't happen before you do it. So it really is ridiculous when you see all these warmongers, and I mean, the war party in Washington, D.C. seems to be as powerful as ever, and they're determined to prevent the leaders of two countries with the combined arsenal of 12,000 nuclear weapons from talking to each other and preventing, God forbid, a catastrophe of global proportions. Now, it's not just about Ukraine. People are forgetting that the New START treaty is set to expire on February 5, 2026. So that's about 3.5 months from now. It's almost impossible to imagine that they can come to an agreement in the next 3.5 months to prolong that treaty and just to ensure that the world is safe. Now, what we're going to see is more escalation because, according to various reports, the Kiev regime is going to get Tomahawk missiles. Now, I'm not saying the Tomahawk missiles are going to defeat the Russian army. They've already been very good at shooting down much more advanced European Storm Shadow cruise missiles. But the thing is, it's about escalation, and it's about the fact that the Kiev regime cannot use these missiles to target the Russians. So who's going to be providing the targeting solutions is going to be the U.S. military once again. And we have the same situation we had in August. I believe it was 2023 or 2024. I forgot the exact year now. When the attackers missiles were dropping on the heads of Russian tourists in Crimea, so it's going to be a very similar situation. So how are you going to have de-escalation if this is going to happen? Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems to me that Trump has been co-opted into doing all this, because this is a far cry from what he was saying less than a year ago.
The problem, Alexander, is here is that we all remember the infamous Zelensky meeting in the Oval Office when he was dressed down by Trump and J.D. Vance, and he kept saying to Zelensky, "You have no cards, you have no cards." But that's the problem. Trump doesn't have any cards. He thinks the force of his personality or something is going to sway the Russians. The Russians have made their position very, very clear from the outset. As a matter of fact, it appears that the Russians are saying, let's pick up where the Russian side left off with the Ukrainians in Istanbul. I mean, the first iteration of Istanbul. The American side doesn't get it. It doesn't get it. It has to be a process. There has to be, they have to address the core issues here. This administration, like the previous one, has never come to terms with that. Alexander.
Well, it's interesting that Marco Rubio's request to basically stop where we are is quite clear. Trump wants to deliver some kind of solution in order to allow...
No, Alexander, I have to interrupt you. No, he doesn't want a solution. He wants a win. They're two different things. Keep going, my friend.
That's his concept of solution. Right. The United States must win one way or another. But at the same time, he wants to please not only Ukraine because of the European Union side, but at the same time, he wants to please Russia at the same time. And however, Russian demands, they are exactly the same. And I honestly can't see... Why would Moscow retreat or accept the current lines of the conflict without at least addressing the underlying causes of the conflict, especially when, for example, Kupiansk is almost lost, Ukrainians have lost it already, Krasnoarmysk is getting into a tough situation for the Ukrainians, and Dnipropetrovsk is already inside. So the chances of success of any talks, in my opinion, are pretty low. So it's better to wait for a better time without fear of embarrassment from Trump's side, rather than go to Budapest, do all this kind of show off to everyone to watch, and then in the end, Trump leaves without any specific win on, based on the American perspective. So there, in my opinion, first, Trump must understand once and for all that he must respect Russia's demands that have been been the exact same since the beginning of the conflict. Russia hasn't changed a bit, not even one line. Everything that was their first demands, they are still the same presently. And I don't see anyone interested on resolving that kind of part of the conflict.
You know, Alex, you know, you look at the Western media and they're talking about, apparently, according to the Financial Times, after Zelensky's recent meeting in the cabinet room, not the Oval Office, is that according to the Financial Times, is that Trump said that you have lost, you're going to be destroyed. He's not interested in maps anymore. And of course, the media always talks about territory, land, and all this. It has nothing to do with territory. Why does the largest country on the planet want more land? Okay, it doesn't make any sense. It does want to protect the people there that identify as being Russian. But what Russia wants is security. But they never get to that level. It's always about land and land. Oh, the Russians have only advanced 1% in this year and all that. That's not what this conflict is about. Alex.
I mean, clearly this meeting was sabotaged. I mean, the U.S. government's position is clear. Diplomacy is always welcome as long as it's absolutely guaranteed to fail so that they can blame it on Russia.
Or diplomacy is accepted if you surrender.
Correct. And the other thing, you know, another person said on the panel here was, you know, Trump is trying to please that side. Trump doesn't care.
Yeah.
Trump is about America first. He only cares about America and doing a deal. Now, if the deal is not in his liking financially or helping the economy, he doesn't care. And really, when it is about discussing strategies, I mean, you got to remember what country this is. This is the United States of America. They've renamed their Department of Defense, Department of War. And they're gearing up. They don't want this conflict to end anytime soon. As much as Trump is trying to sell it to us, nobody's buying it. The Russians are clearly not buying it. And that's why this meeting was sabotaged.
Well, Alex, apparently the Ukrainian people are not buying it either. Only 23%, according to recent polls, want this war to continue. So, you know, we have Zelensky and his crowd in the grift. And, of course, you know, weapons manufacturers in the United States are pleased as punch because not only is Ukraine buying them, the Europeans are buying them for the Ukrainians. Okay, so, I mean, why would anyone want to upset that? Drago, you want to respond? Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a point there. You know, I've been down to this region about 4 months ago. I went to the Donetsk region myself, spent 2 weeks there. When you see what's on the headlines in the United States of America about getting this territory back, clearly no one from the U.S. government has gone to the area that I went to. There's more Russian flags than there are in Moscow down in Donetsk. I mean, these people are not going back to pre, 2014. Not going to happen. And it would just take a quick flight out there, anyone in the government of the United States, to figure it out that, no, this is not a negotiable topic.
Yeah, Drago, one of the things when Trump came to office, there were people came on my program saying that, you know, Trump will de-escalate. No, we only see escalation here. The START agreement is coming to an end. You're absolutely right. We're in a very, very difficult time right now. And I don't see any negotiating on the horizon, particularly the Europeans are not interested.
Well, it seems to me that the war party has taken over the Brussels, unfortunately. Even if there was any chance that Trump might choose peace, we knew from the get-go that the war party that already dominated the Biden administration was going to go to Europe. And the European Union has essentially become sort of like a militaristic organization, almost like a geopolitical pendant of NATO, because we know that they're already giving money to the Kiev regime, money to buy weapons. So the supposedly non-military, non-geopolitical European Union has actually turned into exactly that. So in essence, we see that Europe is militarizing. It is becoming sort of like a border region for the future war, sort of like a new Barbarossa 2.0. And it seems to me that the Europeans have forgotten how the first one ended up being.
Well,
that was before Russia.
I would add, you know, you had the Napoleonic coalition, you had the Hitlerian coalition, now we have the NATO coalition. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Alexander in Portugal. Well, lo and behold, when the Europeans are coming out with a 12-point program, okay, and apparently Trump will be the chairman of the board of it or something like that. I mean, well, they can't even be... They're not even unique in their thinking. Of course, they're playing to his vanity with his so-called 20-point program for Gaza. Anything the Europeans come up will be just as dismal as the one that they have for Gaza. But that's a topic for another program. But, you know, Alexander, again, looking at, you know, the leaks and are always intentional about, you know, territorial issues will be put off into the future. We all know what that means. When there is a ceasefire, NATO rolls in, beefs up the Ukrainians, the Russians, quote unquote, will violate the ceasefire and the war will go on. It's really quite understandable. The Russians are saying, look, we're in this now. We want it over and we don't want to repeat it. Okay? Well, that's very simple. Alexander.
But basically what they want here in the European Union is just to allow Ukraine to reorganize itself, to gain more time, to stall this conflict as much and much longer that they can, because their main goal is only one, is to defeat Russia, is to conquer Russia, and to force at least Russia to be divided and split in many, many regions. This is their idea of peace. Forget about any other solution. There is no peace process. And, for example, if they wanted peace, they would be supporting this Budapest summit, for example. And what we've been hearing was exactly the opposite. For example, when Sikorsky said that if Russia used the Polish airspace, they would try to attack Vladimir Putin's airplane. this is no idea of achieving peace elsewhere. They don't want to talk. They don't want to discuss. They don't even want to try to bargain. What they want is just to show more and more tension, to keep approving and adopting more and more sanctions against Russia. And in the end, we see who is suffering more. And it's not Russia. Russia is finding more and more ways to become self-sufficient, to become independent from the European Union. And on the opposite, we don't see that. And if we take a look, for example, even at Zelensky's requests to have access to the Tomahawks, for example, we see that even on Trump's side, Trump would be against, of course, that if the Ukrainians would attack peaceful cities and civilians. But on the other hand, if Ukrainians would attack oil refineries, terminals, gas pipelines, and export infrastructure hubs, this would be seen not only by Trump, but by the European Union. This would be supported. In the end, what we would have would be Zelensky just cheering his own crowd, those who gather around him. But in the end, it wouldn't bring any kind of effect or solution to achieve peace in this conflict.
Yeah, well, Alexander, on the issue of the Tomahawks, I don't think anybody in the Pentagon wants to see Tomahawks shot down, because it's never happened before, and they will just see what kind of air defenses Russia has. Obviously, Russia is very concerned about it because they could have a nuclear warhead, and that is the concern that we talked about with the START treaty. We're going into a very, very dangerous era. Let's go back to Alex in China. You know, the Europeans, they can't win this war against Russia. They don't know how to end it, meaning they don't know how to make Russia surrender. And they certainly can't afford it. So, you know, to use a Russian metaphor, they're playing roulette. They keep turning the wheel until they get their winning number. And they're going to keep doing it over and over and over again until they think they can win. This is psychotic.
Indeed it is. And we're talking about a bunch of drunken sailors at a poker table in Vegas. They're also gambling with seized Russian funds. Mm-hmm. And that number continues to go down remarkably. When I heard it was almost $300 billion, then it was 220, then it's 180, now it's 140. I mean, this is the same script also, you know, the U.S. government has used for years as well when they go into nations and regime change. But something I want to point out, you know, remember when the Javelins were defensive, yep, or the HIMARS were, yep, defensive, then the Abrams tanks and the F-16s were defensive. I mean, now the Ukrainians are requesting the Tomahawk, you know, a 1,000-mile-plus offensive cruise missile. You know, I'm sure, you know, the brilliant minds in Washington will tell us, you know, again, if they do decide to give them to the Ukrainians, that it's a defensive weapon. It's going to be launched defensively. And the strikes on Moscow should be accepted. This is not going to happen. You cannot, you know, push a country like Russia into a corner, especially when it's got, you know, the largest nuclear warheads on the planet. I just have no idea, you know, I don't think this is a request from Kiev. I think it's a trap. I think it's actually being set by the European Union war hawks to make any peace summit irrelevant. And I think what they're trying to do, because they don't want to come up with a reason why they spent probably $160 billion of seized funds, they're looking for escalation. Yep. You know, how else can this be justified? It makes absolutely no sense.
You're absolutely right. I agree with you 100%, Drago, because Europe says they are the continent must be prepared for war by, I don't know, 2030, 2035. Well, when someone tells you something like that, you should believe them. Yes, they are preparing for war. And no one's voted on this whatsoever. You know, you have failing social services. You have political elites that are very, very unpopular. You have a surging right in Europe, a populist right, banning of political parties, shutting down elections. You know, this is I used to always worry about NATO. I'm more worried about the European Union now. This is turning into a very authoritarian regime.
Well, as I mentioned before, and you also added the Napoleonic Wars as well. We could go back to the 12th to the 13th century, and since the 13th century, there's been almost 800 years of European invasions of Russia, and all of them failed. And that was before Russia had 6,000 nuclear weapons. So if they think they can win this time, well, good luck with that, because they're going to need it, a lot of it. And I just want to add one more thing. Just one Russian missile, the RS-28 Sarmat, is approximately 750 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. That's one missile. The Russian military is getting about 50 of those. One missile, such as the Sarmat, can destroy the territory the size of France or Texas. So again, if somebody thinks it's a good idea to fight Russia, let them try, and then cry about the radioactive wasteland that's going to be left there. So unfortunately, obviously, I'm joking in this case, but I really, really hope it's going to stay on the level of jokes, because this is very, very serious. And it's very serious, as you pointed out, when an organization such as the European Union is talking about war instead of peace and negotiations and the possibility of peaceful coexistence with a country like Russia. It seems to me that the political West has really gotten accustomed to fighting helpless countries. Russia is not one of those.
Absolutely. You know, Alexander, already the frozen Russian assets of the central bank that's been brought up in the program, and it's very, very important. You know, what happened to the rule of law? I mean, this is open theft here, and they're going to let maybe Zelensky decide how to spend it? I mean, how much more lunatic do you want to get? Go ahead, Alexander.
They just here have no ideas. They are not creative anymore. They cannot create new sanctions and different sanctions. So the only way is to start stealing money that does not belong to them, and that, according by international law, is a tremendous violation of sovereignty of another country. But that's not the rules-based order that they usually dare to support every time they want to justify their actions. So basically, I remember here Dmitry Medvedev's words about this. He said that the more money that Europeans will try to get of Russian assets, it means the more territory, more land that will need to be conquered in order to compensate these losses. So in my opinion, this is quite clear. This would be seen as business as usual by the Russians, because they do not act in the international sphere in the same way as the Europeans do. What we see is pure theft, like you said. And on the other side of the Atlantic, what we see from Trump's side is a different policy. It's just a matter of oil about economy, and Russian oil is becoming the quintessence of Trump's entire foreign economic policy. And this, in my opinion, would be very interesting. But the Russians have, in the end, a lot of solutions, a lot of options, without the need even to shoot a missile against any other country. They have many different alternatives, at least to pay in the same coin.
Yeah, I mean, to all three of my guests here, I remember after the coup in 2014 that overthrew the democratically elected President Yanukovych, and then the sanctions came after Crimea. I said the Russians are preparing for the West to sanction them, and they had 8 years to do it. Alex, back in China, I've always said, and considering, you know, what Trump says on even days and odd days, whatever, this is going to be settled on the battlefield. Go ahead.
Well, I think one thing for sure that Trump should tell everybody, that NATO is dead. I don't see it progressing any further than what it can do. It has pretty much emptied the shelves in Germany. It's emptied the shelves in the United Kingdom. It's emptied the shelves of artillery in France. It's over. And this will continue to go on. I don't think Tomahawks are going to make a difference. And it's kind of like, you know, a desperate country. You see Zelensky on his weekly tour, his world tour, I call it, world military tour, to stock up the shelves. It's not going to happen. And we will continue to see the desperation grow to a massive climax. And hopefully, people will come to their senses and figure it out eventually, that this has to end, and it has to end. end with a full surrender of territory to the Russians. I know that to some of the viewers that might seem unrealistic, but we have seen over the years, Russia will continue to push forward. They will continue with their special military operation, and I don't see them coming back from it. I mean, go ahead, Peter.
Just to finish off the program, just to agree with you, there was the Minsk process. The West betrayed that. There was the peace negotiations in Istanbul. The West betrayed that. So why is it going to be different this time, okay? That's why I say there's going to be, it will be a military solution, because there's no reason for Russia to trust anyone in the West when it comes to Russia's security. It will take care of itself. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in China, Serbia, and in Portugal. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.